gentlemen, welcome to the season opener of Swing Thoughts, the award-winning golf nerd podcast. Please welcome your host of the show, golf spiritual leader and Coach Tim. Hello, everyone. Welcome to season the. Now, I know we do shows. I know we've done shows in 2024, but this is the, we sort of officially begin from the first week of April till the Labor Day weekend as our season. There he is, Coach Tim. Welcome to Season 9, Episode 1. How are you, sir?
Really good, really good. Yeah, it's exciting to get this thing going. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like over the winter, it's kind of like simulator golf, swing thoughts, but now we're hitting off turf.
Dude, I love
the
that.
Real thing going.
Did you just come up with that? I dig that.
Yeah, I did. I just read. I'm a writer. I write books and shit, right?
Yeah, easy now with all the swearing. easy with the foul.
That's what happens in season. That's what happens in season 9.
Wow.
You know, all Timmy. That stuff, that difficult, that reticence.
I love it, man. Yeah, that whole, all the stuff, all the episodes we've done since last fall, that's all simulator golf. We're back on turf today. That is great. And pleased to be with everybody. We tape these shows usually on Wednesday. So today is the 10th of April. Masters hasn't started. We got some Masters stuff. I found something I thought you'd appreciate as a coach and our audience would appreciate as golfers, which is, I'll play a little audio later of a bunch of old pros, Jose Mario Lazabal and Mark O'Mara, all talking about what a 15 handicap would shoot at Augusta. So I've got that coming up. Speaking of audio, we're really excited, as we've mentioned several times, to welcome back our sort of our marquee sponsor, our presenting sponsor, TaylorMade Golf. I was at the lab yesterday, picked up my QI10 driver, 3-wood. I got my wedges, but I also got those the TP5X.
Nice.
And talking to Nick O there, the ball, they're really excited in a way that I don't think I've seen the guys there excited about the new golf ball as they have in years. The all-new TP5, the softest five-layer tour ball, and the TP5X, now a half club longer. And they're able to say that. A half club longer. And that's what I'm going to be playing this year. I've done some testing with the golf balls. And what they've done, and there's a bunch of science, which is not my best thing, but there's some science around this.
He even hesitated saying the word.
Yeah, there's some science. Because here's the reason I'm hesitating, because Nick was trying to explain it to me. And Nick's very good, our friend Nick over there. And I said, tell you what, Nick, just send it to me in an email. But what the basics are is the TP5X, they've made the inside softer, so but it plays like a longer ball. So you're going to have that soft feel that you like from a premium ball, but they've been able to make it. And he said, "We this has gone through legal. They're saying it's a half club longer." And I can tell you this, with my 7-iron, whatever my normal stock is, 160, 65, I was hitting it 5 yards longer. So I can tell you, it's going to make a difference. And before we get to our other sponsors, I thought it would be kind of fun to play some real grown-up TaylorMade stuff. Listen to this.
Get fit with TaylorMade Golf's ultimate custom club fitting experience. The TaylorMade Performance Lab in Woodbridge unites golfers with a personalized fitting session and TaylorMade equipment to optimize your game. Highly trained master fitters take an in-depth look at the golf swing utilizing industry-leading technology. Book your fitting experience now to cover all your custom needs from driver to putter. Free gift with booking. Get fit. Optimize your game at the TaylorMade Performance Lab. Visit TaylorMadeFitting.ca.
How about that? That's some cool shit. Whoa. Right there. Yeah.
That's some professional voiceover stuff.
That is. That's a real professional. Speaking of which, here's Tim O'Connor to tell you more about Oscar Bravo.
Yeah. This year, if you look in your closet and you're not inspired to wear a golf polo to your golf course this year, you got to check out whoisoscarbravo.com. I guarantee you, you will find these shirts amazing to look at and to wear. They feel amazing, made of fine Italian cotton. Check out whoisoscarbravo.com.
As well, we want to welcome a new sponsor. You know, just we had an excellent interview with Gavin from Mexico last week. And it's our pleasure to tell you to go to secretlinks.golf to check out the offering. You missed the show last week. We talked about this place that I was near in Mexico that's fantastic. Kind of like where paradise meets golf. It really is. It really is something else. Where golf and I don't know why I want to say this, because I was going back and forth with Gavin this morning. I said, "What should I say?" And he gave me a couple ideas. And I said, "You know, how about I say where golf and paradise dry hump each other?" But that's just for fun, okay? It's really where world-class golf courses meet the mesmerizing Mexican Caribbean. Find out more at secretlinks.golf. Okay? All right, everybody?
Yeah. You got a lot of good stuff happening there. You got those INGs happening, the Exican, you know, Caribbean, Mexican. It's all good.
Yeah, a lot of alliteration. Speaking of writing,
exactly.
Remind everybody, before we kick off today's fantastic solid gold content, let's talk about the book. Once again, this program brought to you by the latest book from golf writer extraordinaire, Ontario Golf Hall of Fame recipient, Timothy Aloysius O'Connor.
I received? No, wait. I was inducted into.
Inductee.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, my book, Getting Unstuck, Six Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds, is in the home stretch, working on the design and the cover. I'm looking at the picture right now that we're working with a designer with, so it's pretty exciting. And hoping to get this out. Probably won't be till May, and that's fine. Good things come to those who wait. How about that?
Before we get into some stuff about the Masters, and I hit that TaylorMade QI10 yesterday, and I haven't taken a lot of golf swings in the last 10 days, but I can tell you, after I got warmed up and I hit my old driver, which I still love, but I was hitting that pretty good for an old man. And
nice, nice.
And I just like the way it looks. Anyway, I wanted to tell you, I had a story from last week that I wanted to share with you, because you're the kind of person I love telling these stories to. Because you're as I've said many times, Tim's superpower is his ability to empathize and his ability to hold a safe space for men to speak their truth.
Am I going to need a cart for this, or are we walking?
Hey, no. Did you not love that? Come on. Holding a safe space. Nice. See, you got embarrassed. That's crazy. I'm here you are, the safe space holder. And by the way, that's my line.
That is good. That is good. That is good. Well, you wrote that in the foreword.
Yes.
So, folks, that's another reason to get my book, because Howard wrote the foreword to my book, and it has some lovely stuff in it, including that he finds me empathetic, which is nice. Thank you.
Which is hilarious, because what you just said there was not empathetic, but that's, you know, that's comedy.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I'll try and make this brief, but so a week ago, I've been home now for 10 days. Well, my last week there, and to give you some context, in 63 days that I was gone in the second half of the winter, I either golfed or practiced north of 55 days. That's a lot of days.
This is a lot of days, yeah.
I know that.
Even for someone like yourself.
And my last week I was there, I played Monday, Tuesday, practiced Wednesday, played Thursday, Friday. Had some good rounds. My Monday, Tuesday rounds were pretty good. You know, kind of in my average. But Friday was the worst round of golf that I played in my entire time that I was there that I kept score. There were other rounds where I would just go out and, you know, fool around, play two balls, play nine holes, dick around. But in any round that I actually thought of, oh, what number am I shooting? It was, by all metrics for me, the worst round. In fact, my sister-in-law, in Spanish, mi cuñada, literally said to my brother, not to me, She said, I've never seen something like, I've never seen him hit worse shots than he, like she was, it, I was hitting it so bad, it was surprising people. But here's the story. We got joined up with somebody on, so there was three of us, and then just before we teed off, someone comes racing up, the starter with an, a guy and his wife in a cart, and she's just going to be watching. Turns out the guy is the assistant supervisor of the National. I've known this guy for 25 years.
Oh, my goodness.
The, he's been working on the golf course since I was a kid. He's about 10 years older than me. And by the way, his name is Tim as well.
There you go.
And it, he was so excited to play with me because he's known me since I played at the National. And he was just happy to be joined up with people. And we had a great time. Telling, because it was a long round that day, and telling stories about the National and people that we knew, and telling my brother and sister-in-law, you know, watching me play, blah, blah, blah. And I couldn't have shot worse. You know, I don't even want to tell you the score, because if I tell you, go, that's not so bad. Just know for me, it was in the wheelhouse of, you know, I won't probably score much higher than I did. At the, here's what I wanted you, but this is the part I want to share with you. I had a great day with this guy because we told, again, because of the companionship. So at the end of the round, and not once, by the way, did we talk about how shitty I was hitting it. At the end of the round, we putt out, everyone takes their hats off, shakes hands. He hugs me.
Aww.
He hugs me and says to all around, Howard, playing with you today, it made my entire vacation, is what he said. Made my entire vacation. Getting to play with you, not how well or bad you played. And I thought to myself, you know, it was my worst round score-wise, but probably my best round, you know, evolved-wise, because mm-hmm. I know, and we both know, it wasn't so long ago when that would not have been the case. It was a while, it would be a while ago now, but in my lifetime, there would have been many occasions where, had I hit the ball like I was hitting it, and I mean, I was in the jungle, I was hitting it all over the place, and it's a very hard golf course. Now, in my defense, I was playing it from 6,600 yards at sea level.
Ooh, yeah.
So it was a lot of long shots into greens, a lot of four irons on par fours, and yeah, I struggled. But when he said that to me, I thought, you know what? That's a pretty good assessment of today's golf. So there you go, okay, Mr. Funny Boy.
I thought that was your role.
I know. I'm just bugging you. Anyway, I thought that was great. I thought I got to tell Tim that story. He'll love that.
That's a cool story. Absolutely, it is. I think it speaks to something that we've talked about on this show over the course of 9 years, that there's a golf is played on this kind of wider palette, if you will, or stage. And if it's just about the numbers on the card, we're missing a key part of golf for sure. And to me, so much of golf is just the shared experience, the having fun, the one-liners, just being together. And so I that's wonderful that someone would commend you like that and would speak to it. And that's just, and I'm not at all surprised at all, like by that at all, is that, like you're a fun guy to play golf with. We've talked about the stories of you, I think in the first two or three club C's at the National, never making it to the 10th of the first round.
Because I thought it was a nine and dine. It was a nine. I called them nine and dashes.
See, you are the funny man.
Thank you.
And you would also punish your five iron, you know, coming out of the gates that are dragging along the ground. Oh, yeah. Okay, five iron day. I mean, so you've come around, like, you know, a lot of us do in our vintage years.
Mm-hmm.
To see the game is bigger than that. But you've also been through, you used evolved facetiously, but you really have evolved as a golfer, I think, and as a person, when we have this wider perspective of golf and we don't live and die with every shot. And there's just something that comes, and I think it just, that's why golf is so freaking appealing to me, is that it just has this, it's just this lovely big experience of ourselves, of others, of the earth, of the world. We should have some music going now.
Okay, hang on a second. Wow. Well, no, all of it was great.
Folk-infused music with some, I don't know.
How about... you're gonna...
And flute music?
How about something like this? Mr. Sandman. You know, Tim, I appreciate you saying that. I knew that. I thought you holding a safe space for me to tell that story. And, you know, what you said, too, about golf being a wider canvas and golf, the day is more than just about keeping the score. And, you know, in the end, yeah, I was a bit, I could, you know, I have now learned to give myself grace, as your people like to say. Whereas, you know, I knew early on, I could tell warming up. That was the last day of, like I said, nearly 55-ish days of, you know, hitting a golf ball. And I could tell that morning, you know, I was a bit stiff. And, you know, we talk a lot about this on the show, Leigh, and I've had this conversation with some of the people I've worked with. I say, you know, you got to be careful not to expect whatever showed up, you know, day one of the tournament or last weekend with your buddies, because, you know, your body is going to feel different, and golf swinging, you know, is different every day. That's why, you know, you can't rely on, you know, we both have heard people say this, and where they'll say, oh man, you really should have seen how I was driving it last week. And I always say, well, last week's a long time ago in golf. You know, and what happens, I think, to now bring this to other people listening, when you base your expectations every day on your historical, you know, performance, whether that was yesterday or even the hole before, you know, Nicklaus was famous for just taking what his golf swing would give him on that day. Famous story of him driving it poorly in a tournament, first two or three holes, and then deciding not to hit driver again for the rest of the round. Now, yes, you could say, well, that's easy. He hits his 3 woods, you know, but the point is, trying to find your golf swing when things aren't going well, you know, can only lead to a lot of unpleasant, you know, encounters.
Yeah. We've talked about it again, you know, things that we've said on the show before.
Right. This is a category.
Yeah, exactly. You can't think about your golf swing as you're making a golf swing when you're playing. But it's interesting is that the reason I've been kind of looking off to the right here, is I'm looking at this monitor, that this other monitor here. So I've been working on the book, and I was reviewing our conversation that we had with Judson Brewer, you know, back in the early days of the show. And that was one of a huge get for a show, to get a guy like Judson Brewer. Check him out on his TED Talks are amazing. He's got some great books out. But so he's a psychiatrist who has who's really done a lot of studying around mindfulness. And so I transcribed what he said. I'm not going to give the whole damn thing, but I just think it's right in this area what we're talking about. He says, in reality, it comes back to expansion and contraction. He says, if you're going out to shoot a certain score, that's in order to, it's based on an extrinsic reward. So he says, if the trigger is the thought to shoot a certain score and we do it, he says, we feel good. That's the external reward. I'm going to do that again. He says, but if we're on track not to do that, it's a death spiral. Mm-hmm. If we're not going to shoot a good score, and he says, as I wrap this up, he says, in AA, they call that stinking thinking. But he says, if we have intrinsic motivators about having fun, I'm going to enjoy everything. But he says, that's play, and that's an intrinsic reward, a.k.a. it just makes us feel good inside.
I love all of that. And in the context of this, you know, we all have rounds where early on or in the middle of the round, or, you know, maybe the whole day isn't, you know, like I, you know, I'm famous for a bunch of stupid golf sayings. And one of the things I say often is, you know, eventually everyone's handicap shows up, even if it takes, even if it doesn't show up that day. You know, I told you the story last fall of playing with a dude who has 6 handicap, hits the ball good. Our first time playing together, he looked over at me warming up and went, "Oh, you know, looks like a decent player." Like he wasn't sure because he didn't like it when we when the round was arranged. It wasn't like Howard's a scratch golfer, you know. So,
yep.
And the first 4 or 5 holes we played pretty much the same. I made a few bogeys, wasn't really hitting it great, and then around the 7th or 8th hole, I just started sort of playing a little bit better, and I played it. I shot even par for the rest of the round. And as we were driving home, he was like, "Yeah," he said, "I thought you were like me until about the 8th hole. Then I realized there was a difference." And I, you know, that the joke being is like my handicap showed up. But what I'm, and it's, again, I'm, it's easy for me because I have the confidence knowing eventually my game will come around. But I think everybody should understand that. If not that day, it's not over forever. And I think what, you know, that the idea of your reward being the enjoyment of the day outside of what you may or may not score is a tough lesson that I had to learn. Really hard lesson. And I think you were right. I'll stop in a second. I'll say that you were right when you said that, you know, part of the aging process has, you know, led us all to know that given our limited time, you'd better enjoy the moment, even if it's not the best golfy score that you've ever shot.
Bleh. Wise words. GSL.
But it took me a long time, Timmy. And you know, that's not to say, by the way, that that day I was still trying to, like, wonder, like, okay, well, again, I played it from a really long, I was playing a long course that day. And wasn't hitting it great, but I did hit some good shots. Like, you know, I do that thing that, you know, you and Kent and other gurus talk about. Like, I journaled some of my better shots that day. It wasn't a complete disaster, but my main journal point was that another human being had such a nice experience of me, regardless of what he saw me hitting a golf ball. Now, yeah, sure, he's been seeing me hit golf balls since I was in my mid-30s. So he knows, like, I guess maybe that was part of it to me, too. He knows I can play. I don't have to prove to him. But I don't really feel like, I don't know about you, I don't feel I'm prove. I don't need to prove to anybody anymore if I can play or not.
100%. We don't, and no one cares.
No one cares, exactly.
Back to that old, you know, maxim, if you will, is that no one cares. It's all about connection and having a great time and just... That's why golf is such a wonderful activity. Sounds like we're working with Play-Doh or cardboard and scissors, but it's such a great thing to do with business clients. Is because you really experience people in their fullness, and it's about having a good time.
Well, and yeah, but for some reason, and that's why we started this show, is that it's not always self-evident or evident in the way people behave. You know, I told you there's a great story from our friend Kent Osborne. We're going to get him on in a couple of weeks. And, you know, he had a horrific experience with somebody just recently where the entire way around, the person was whining and pissed off and throwing clubs. And I can empathize. I've been that guy. And I just wish I would have figured this all out a little earlier in life because maybe I could have, you know, saved myself some aggravation.
I know. Well, you don't need to be 62, 63. Which is it for you?
It's a 64. 60,
really?
Yes. 64.
Well, I'm gonna turn 67 in a couple of weeks.
Wow.
And
when's your birthday?
April 20th, meeting Adolf Hitler.
Wow.
anyway.
Wow. Wow.
You didn't know that one?
I didn't know you were born on the same day as Adolf.
Yeah. It also coincides with what the kids, I think before it was all legalized. It was
420. 420. Oh, 420. Cool.
There we go. So maybe we'll stress that part of it.
Yeah, man.
And what the hell is my point? I don't know. I think we just get to a certain age and it's like, oh, fuck it.
No.
Who cares? It's like, you know, I can talk to this attractive young person and there's no worries because she knows that I'm way too old to actually be any kind of an actual person that would ask her out. So it's just, there's more freedom.
I'm sorry. Where are we going? Why are you,
Let's just move on.
Why are you hitting on young women right now?
That, I think that might have been a shank. I'm not sure.
Wow.
We can just go
I take my eyes off you for 1 second. listen, it's time to a tradition like no other. Swing Thoughts at the Masters. Just remind everyone, for those people that haven't heard the Tim O'Connor origin story, asking out the cart girl.
I knew you couldn't keep it together.
I can't stop. When he wasn't out hitting on younger women, he was a cub reporter for the Daily Planet. For how many years? Just give me some stats. How many years did you go to the Masters?
7. Pretty sure it was 7.
Who were you working for at the time?
I was mainly working for CBC Radio. I was their kind of their freelance golf person.
Nice.
And I traveled to U.S. Opens, PGAs, certainly RBC Canadian Open, the Women's Canadian Open. But obviously the highlight every year was being accredited to the Masters.
Give us, again, this is old news for you STDs, but give us a little bit of perspective, but also any highlights. I know you never got to play in the media thing, which was, I know that story that got rained out. I know, it's a painful memory every year. Explain what that is.
Well, on Saturdays, they do a draw. It used to be 20 broadcast, 20 print. Now everyone's just the same now. But they would draw names from media who entered this little lottery to play the course on Monday. And in 1989, I got picked. And those of you of a certain vintage may recall that Masters ultimately won by Nick Faldo in a playoff against Scott Hoke.
Yeah, excruciating.
It started to rain on Saturday and it rained Sunday. And it's still raining Monday, and we'll just say that they don't give rain checks at Augusta National.
A couple things. I am of that vintage, and I'm enough of a golf nerd to know I can see that putt that Scott Hoke missed. I think it was on 11.
It was on 10.
On 10, then.
And I was about 40 feet away.
And he missed it. That. What was it? It was a couple feet, maybe?
Yeah, I was like 2 feet, 2.5 maybe, and it was just, but it was a bit of a slider.
Yeah.
And he just it was, I think if I recall, it was a typical D cell, and it just, you know, just went under the cup, and you knew he'd lost it right there.
What was it like?
It was a sad moment.
I got a question for you. What was it like for you on Saturday? Like, you'd been, I don't know how many times you'd been at that point, but what was it like when you got your number called? Like, by the way, everyone, this is Tim, a guy we know. He could have been a guy we know that had played Augusta. Just to be clear, he's a guy we know who had a chance to play Augusta and watched the forecast go into the shit. So what was it like on Saturday? And then what was it like as, take us through that.
Well, I think the really funny part was, obviously I'm elated. I'm absolutely elated. And so before I had to sort of go to work with CBC Radio in the afternoon, starting at, you know, hourly reports at, I think it was at noon or at 1, I would walk the golf course. And I remember that Saturday morning, kind of walking on air, and to me, it just struck me as ridiculous. I'm going like, don't hit it over here on four.
That's right.
Make sure you hit away from this bunker on number 7. And then I went, wake the hell up, pal. You're just going to be happy. You don't have any control over.
Did, yeah, like you have like, control over where you're going to hit it. What did you have your clubs with you?
Yes, absolutely.
Nice.
Because I knew that this lottery thing would happen.
So Saturday at around breakfast time, you get told you're going to play Augusta National. Like,
yeah,
crazy. When did you realize, and or when were you alerted to the sad fact that you were not going to play Augusta National?
Well, I just woke up with kind of not the greatest feeling on Monday morning because it was still raining. And anyone who's been around golf for even a little while knows a golf course can only absorb so much rain. So I went, okay, we'll drive over there. And I park the car, get out, and I'm starting to walk towards the clubhouse. And I see one of my fellow ink-stained wretch journalists walking towards me with his head down. And that's when I knew.
No, no.
I just knew. And we just had a conversation, and he said, nah, rained out.
God. Yeah, man. Can you imagine? Well, you can, actually. I was going to say. Yes. I was going to actually ask you, can you imagine how disappointing that would be? But obviously you can, because it happened to you.
I know. And this is actually when I tore up my Roman Catholic membership card. I went, there cannot be a God if for this to have happened. It just cannot be. The world is too painful and ugly a place for there to be a supreme being who would allow this to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if there was one, which there isn't, like, imagine that's what he's got on his plate. Oh, wait a second. Hang on a second. What's that? Tim O'Connor at Augusta? Yeah, I'm gonna shit can that. Okay. Yeah. Let me get right to that, Tim.
Yeah, let me get back to my bus plunge.
Yeah. Let's not debate the existence of deities or deities, deity or deities. So I very little prepare. In case you haven't figured out, there's very little preparation for this program. Although I did come across something that I thought would be of amusement or of interest for. I think the average male handicap is 14 point something, their index. I think average female one is like 18.
And that number is skewed low because that's only the majority of people don't keep a handicap. So,
of the people that keep, I'm sorry, yeah. Mr.
No.
I'm sorry, Mr. Book Editor. Of the people, I should have said, of the people that have handicaps.
Mr. Empathetic Book Editor.
That's right. Holy fuck. I set you up as this empathetic, hold a space person, and all you're doing is tearing me down, Tim. Okay, let me start the sentence again. Of the fucking people that keep a handicap, okay, Mr. Stickler?
Yes, got it. Yes.
Crabby old man. How old are you? You're going to be 67? Man, you look good for 67.
Don't remind me.
All right. Of the people, so average is around 15 or whatever, or 14 point something. So here's a young lady, and I think she's interviewing a bunch of Masters champions, mostly old guys, asking the question, what would a 15 handicap shoot at Augusta? Hang on.
Shoot in Masters conditions at Augusta National.
A 15 handicap at Augusta National.
Mark O'Meara.
From where these kids play today, for sure would not even have a chance of breaking 100. That's how difficult the course is. That's how much slope there is and speed in the greens. An average player would have a very difficult time getting around Augusta National in less than 100.
They'd have a hard time breaking 100.
Yeah.
They really would. Playing there for the first time, you're just going to be so excited.
Larry
Mize.
It's
going to be hard to focus in on your game. It's just the nerves of playing there for the first time and then maneuvering those greens. I mean, the average amateur does not play greens like that. They may get some contours similar to that, but the speed is, you know, pretty unusual. They're pretty quick, and the contours too. I think a 15 handicap, because, you know, they're normally shooting, what, mid-80s, something like that. They would have to play really, really, really good to break 100.
In Masters conditions,
Jose.
Well, I think they would have a hard time breaking 100.
That's what we've gotten, that answer every time, so I think that's got to be what it is. What would a
15? So, first of all, 15 handicaps don't normally shoot in the mid-80s. An average score for a 15 handicap is closer to 87, if not 89, give or take. I don't think a 15 handicap breaks 120 at Augusta. What do you think?
You know what? I thought the number that came to me before Amir said 100 was 110, because I just can't imagine how a 15 handicapper would anything less than 3 and 4 whack pretty well every green.
I will tell you that a scratch golfer will have trouble breaking 100 there.
Yes.
I mean, I think, and we're talking, again, from those tees that they're playing, that's what the question is. From the tees that the kids are playing, that golf course stretches out to, I don't know what it is now, 7,300, 7,400 yards.
Mm-hmm.
No, and again, I'm not comparing this course I played to Augusta, but I got to see professional golfers play a golf course from 7,300 yards. And I was thinking to myself, okay, could I break 100 from these tees in tournament conditions? Speedy greens, and it's not Augusta. I think I could, but I think it would be, I'd be in the 90s for sure. I'd have to play great to shoot in the 80s, but I'm not breaking 100 at Augusta National, I don't think. What about
you? I think you're totally realistic about that. You see, at Augusta, particularly around the greens, you have shots that you don't face anywhere else. We've all seen those calendars of the world's hardest golf holes. Like you see a green perched on top of a, you know, a building or a canyon,
on a volcano's edge or something. Yeah.
One of the things that TV just does not communicate or show is how majority of the greens, particularly greens like 14, 17, they're set up on these little plateaus. So the ball goes, the green is just perched up on top of these plateaus. And so, A, you have the slopes, but you'd be facing, because the ball would run off all the time, you would face these shots that basically go up a ramp off a really tight lie.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't face those shots anywhere else. Perhaps at the odd links course,
yeah.
But so that would be part of the reason. Again, and that's just something that the elevation change from just, you know, walking from the base of 18.
Yeah, going up that hill.
Up the hill or down the hill on 10. Yeah. TV just doesn't.
Well, two things. I only went. I've only been there once. I didn't, you know, cover it for CBC like some.
Oh, you've been too. I didn't know you've been there.
Well, we've had this conversation every year. It's okay. We have this conversation every year. You don't have to remember. I was thinking while you were talking, though, if only we knew somebody that had actually played there. But sadly, we don't.
We do. Actually,
no,
we do.
I mean you, O'Connor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I knew a couple of meaty people who.
For our little joke this morning, it's too bad we don't know somebody. But we know somebody that almost played it. That's pretty good. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead. We do. I know some people that have played it. Rubenstein's played it. I know a few other people.
Weeksy.
To me, you know, I love Bob Weeks, but he's got one of those careers that I wish I could have. And so whenever I think of him, I think of the way Seinfeld thinks of Newman. I go, oh, yeah, Weeksy. Fucking Weeksy. How did Weeksy weasel his way into that gig? He's not golf spiritual leader. I could give him five aside. Weeksy. Anyway, I'm just jealous, Bob. I'm just jealous. It is too bad that, you know, we. What was your handicap in 1989, you think?
Oh, I think it was like 11-ish.
Too bad we don't know. Because then we would find out what an 11 handicap. What a shot. Although the tees you guys were playing are not, though, pro tees. Although, famously, what they do for these media guys, from what I understand, is they leave the pins in the Sunday placements that the pros played it.
Yeah. So the only connection I can make to this is I played Glen Abbey from the same tees, same pins on a Monday after the Canadian Open and shot about a million.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons is the ball would like disappear in the rough. You just couldn't find it.
Well, and the speeds of the greens. Listen, back to the National coming full circle on today's show. So the guy I played with has been the assistant to Chris Stu, who's the superintendent at the National, has been for years. And, you know, I've told this story about talking to Dave Barr when I first joined it. I'd go there regularly and they'd be like, you can't go off nine right now. Roger Clemens is playing. I'm like, what? you can. Dave Barr and a group are playing. So I talked to Dave Barr. So, you know, Dave, they tell me this golf course is very difficult. And just give me your perspective. I said, you know, what would they have to do to hold a U.S. Open here? And she's like, I cut the greens or do this or that. He goes, no, just put the flags in. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, they just put the flags in. They could do the U.S. Open here. I will tell you at the National, from the back tees now, which they've lengthened, I'm not sure when the last time you have been there. I was there a couple times last summer. They've got tees now that you wouldn't recognize. It's 73 or 400 yards now, and I promise you, forget tournament conditions, a 15 handicap who's not a member there could not break 100 from the back tees. Not even close.
Yeah, I totally get it.
Not even close.
Yeah, I was really fortunate. Back in the 90s when I was doing some writing work with Ben Kern, who was the director of golf at the time, I got to play it a lot, and it was just like, wow, this is a stinking hard golf course. But yeah. the happy thing that happened for me there was I got to meet, on one occasion, the members of Def Leppard who had played.
Just showed
up,
yeah.
On another occasion, although they were not a fan of the band at all, Judas Priest. And that's when I cottoned on that this is what these veteran bands do. They play golf. That way they stay away from drugs and alcohol during the day.
Throwing TVs out of windows. Okay, I think that was all. Oh, I know. I was going to say one last thing. Hope everyone enjoys the Masters. It really is. You know, even Freddie and I were talking about it on the Humble and Fred show about how even for non-serious golfers, like Fred plays 10, 12 times a year, even for those casual golfers, this kind of is like the transition, official transition into spring. I read something, I think it was yesterday, about making changes in your golf swing. Or maybe I was watching this on TV last night, but there was a great phrase. No, it came from Paul McGinley, actually. It was Paul McGinley talking about his teacher, Bob Torrance, very famous European golf master. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all guilty of this, of chasing perfection or trying to get better, etc. And what McGinley said that Torrance told him is this: don't strengthen your weakness or weaknesses to weaken your strength. Like a lot of us think that we like the swing to be in certain positions, or we'd like it to be prettier, or we'd like to hit it further. And what we end up doing sometimes is we weaken our strengths, things that we're already pretty good at. And I would just say that as a sort of a way to end the show today, that, you know, that's something for us to think about. You know, you're already pretty good, and maybe the nirvana of golf perfection, you know, it's not out there, and you're certainly not going to get it. You know, it's April now. As my friend Nick Trucchio used to say, if your changes are, whatever changes you were going to make, it's April now. And that's it.
That's right.
That's what you got.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, you know, hallelujah, golf season is upon us here in the greater Toronto area. And it's a beautiful sunny day today. And a lot of the golf courses are yet to open, but few are. I mean, it's just an amazing time of year. But, you know, what's interesting is that when the Masters was in previous years, golf was still sometimes 3 to 4 weeks away. But now it's like, it's right upon us. So it's nice to be able to maybe watch a bit of Masters, head out the door, go to a range or something like that.
Yeah, but I know we only had a couple more minutes left. So, because I didn't grow up in this area, but I've been here for half my life. And you're right. I don't recall in the early days of me being here in the 90s where you could, like, there's maybe the big courses aren't open, but I would bet there's a couple dozen golf courses all around us between Guelph and Toronto that are open now.
100%.
And I don't recall that in the early days. And this past winter, there were golf courses in Toronto, the GTA, open the first week of March.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, enjoy it, everybody. Tim O'Connor's new book will be out hopefully before next Masters. We're all looking forward to 6 ways of perfection. Don't so enjoy the golf spiritual. What's it called?
Getting Unstuck: 6 Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds. I had to say that with my eyes closed to get it all out, but there you go.
Getting Unstuck. I'm going to do it too with my eyes closed. Getting Unstuck, six transformational practices for golf nerds. And looking forward to that. Thanks very much to TaylorMade. Let me do this one more time because it's very, very cool, especially because here's some more information about these golf balls. Because next week, I'm going to be gone. Remember we talked about taping it early? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to tape it right after the... we're going to tape next Monday. And next week, I'll be trying out these golf balls. Have a
what
listen.
What if the golf ball you're playing isn't the ball for you? Meet the all-new TP5 and TP5X from TaylorMade. Whether you prefer the softest five-layer tour ball in the TP5 or the fastest, now a half club longer, TP5X. Play a golf ball that performs like it was built for you. Available in white, yellow, and picks. Or personalize it with my symbol. No matter which you choose, every TP5, TP5X is designed to help your game. Find your number one ball at TaylorMadeGolf.ca.
All right. And Tim, we want to thank our apparel sponsor,
who is OscarBravo.com.
And if you want to get away... we recommend a beautiful Mexican experience at secretlinks.golf, timoconnor.ca, humbleandfredradio.com. Happy Masters, everybody. We'll see you next week. A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel all right when you hear the music.